You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to a Times Higher Education issue review podcast for the week of March 1st through the 7th. Today we'll be focusing on mental wellness in the university sector, which is what our magazine is dedicated to this week, and what I'll be talking to with our reporters, Sita Bardwa and Sophie Ng. Hi guys.
Hello. Hi.
Thanks for joining me today. My first question would be, is this a crisis? Is there a decline in mental wellness within the academic community? Sophie, what do you think?
Well, this is a very interesting question because the word crisis has been sort of bandied around in the UK press for quite a while now with regards to mental health in universities. But what I found is when I spoke to experts about this, all of them rejected this word crisis. For example, I spoke to Susan Guthrie, who conducted a study for RAND Europe entitled Understanding Mental Health in the Research Environment. So she found that, 37% of academics were found to have a common mental health disorder, which is shocking in itself. But she actually rejected this term crisis. She said it indicates that it's a new phenomenon, but actually it's been going on for quite some time. And said it's a long-standing problem that results from some of the challenges in the nature of the work and the workplace.
So certainly based on the people that you've spoke with, this isn't something new. This is something that the university community has been struggling with for many years?
Well, I mean, that was the sort of expert opinion. When I spoke to academics themselves, a lot of them cited the sort of recent changes in academia.
So for academics, it's been going on for quite a long time. In particular, it's probably more down to the fact that there's just higher levels of reporting. There's better awareness of mental health than there was maybe 10 years ago. So I think people are just talking about it a lot more, and it's being reported a lot more in the media. I would say that's probably more of a reason why there's so much kind of discussion around mental health at the moment.
In our feature this week, we kind of have a double feature, I guess, where Sophie, you wrote about how academics are struggling with this issue, and CT, you covered it more from the student side. So Sophie, in your reporting, you spoke with some academics, one who is an early career researcher who's on one of the zero-hour contracts that so many academics find themselves on. What was your conversation like with her?
Well, this woman, who didn't want to be named for obvious reasons, she identified the lack of job security as a persistent source of anxiety for her. To quote from this woman, she said, "Biggest issue is the additional stress of being constantly broke or having just enough money, but not enough ever to get comfortable." Her contract is due to end in early May, and she's now looking for another job to tide her over until the start of the next academic year, which is a very stressful situation. And on top of this are all the other duties that academics are expected to perform, such as, research, writing, and providing student support and answering emails.
So financial burdens are play into this.
Yes, definitely.
And what about, you also spoke with a PhD student at the University of Oxford for your piece?
Yeah, so this was very interesting because actually there was a study that identified PhD students as among the academics facing the most stress in universities. And this particular candidate, who also didn't wish to be named, she identified the shock of going from a fast-paced, high-intensity master's program to a PhD as one of the reasons for the deterioration of her mental health. And she said, no one really prepares you for the unstructured days, however hard you try to structure them. So welcome in anxiety and depression and Netflix binging. And that summed up the feelings of many of the PhD students who I didn't have space to quote in the article.
So a lot of them were saying it's kind of whenever that big shift in I guess, authority and support, daily support that they're used to getting in their previous degrees in their PhD program, they're struggling with having it be more kind of self-motivated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What about with students, Sita? You travel all over the world speaking to students. Is mental health something that comes up in the conversations that you have with them?
Yeah, it definitely does. For the feature as well, I spoke to people in the UK, in America, in India, and in Canada, and every single one of them said that this is an issue among the student body at the universities, either that they work in or that they attend. And it kind of although there are some like cultural differences as to why this is an issue, they generally do seem to be very similar factors that have contributed to this. So things like academic pressures, financial pressures, this expectation for perfection seems to really be hitting students quite hard. And I think also things like homesickness, uncertain job prospects. So this whole kind of like myriad of factors are now feeding into this increase in mental health reporting from students.
And is there a parallel increase in pastoral care and mental health support that students feel they're getting?
Universities are really working to address this issue. It seems that quite a few individual universities are starting to overhaul their student support services. There are some kind of overarching initiatives, like here in the UK there was the Step Change Framework, which was released by Universities UK, which is kind of like a blueprint for universities to take on and then adapt their services to individual universities. I think it just seems that universities are really struggling with the amount of students that are coming to them, and also the way that the services are structured at the moment seems to not quite be getting to every single student that needs the support. So there is definitely work that's happening. It just kind of needs to keep going and keep adapting to really address these issues.
What about for supports for academics, Sophie? What have you found in terms of what universities are able to offer, and if academics feel they're getting the support that they need?
Well, I think this is still quite a new area that hasn't really been discussed, certainly not as much as student mental health. And it's still sort of very much up in the air. I think universities are only just starting to realise that, you know, staff are having these mental health issues. And while some universities do provide counselling for staff, others simply expect them to go to their local doctor. For example, here in the UK, this is quite problematic because of all the cuts to the National Health Service. So patients can often wait months to be treated for depression.
You wrote a story recently that was based on a report that talked about academics who are in the front line with student-facing activity, and they feel that they don't have necessarily the right training to support students who come to them with mental health issues, and that it's actually affecting their own mental health as well.
Yeah, so often the first people that students will go to is their academic, because they already have a rapport with them, they work very closely with them, and they might not feel like opening up to someone they don't know, like a doctor, for example. But the problem with this is that academics, first of all, they're under a lot of pressure themselves. And second of all, they may not have the right training to triage these students and give them the right support.
Earlier this morning, I spoke with Nicola Byram, who's a lecturer in psychology at King's College London and was one of the authors of that report. And I asked her if she's observed a decline in mental wellness in the academic community and who she thinks is responsible for improving any pastoral care for both students and academics. Here's what she had to say.
I think the honest answer to that is that we don't know. We do know that students seem to be a lot more concerned about their mental health. Whether that is that there's an increase in clinical levels of mental health difficulties, we don't actually know. Either way, we should be concerned that students are concerned about their mental well-being. We do know that mental health problems have increased among young women across the population as a whole, not just focusing on students. So to an extent, some of the change that we're seeing in students might represent that population level change. But we don't have the data to say any more than that.
Is data being collected? Is there a way to take a quantitative approach to this?
We desperately need that data. It's not being collected at the moment, but there are lots of researchers working on trying to get projects established that will collect that data and set up a robust national program to monitor student mental health. But it's not entirely easy, because it's not simply a question of surveying students and measuring their mental well-being, because it depends how you ask the questions and who's asking the questions. And we know that you get different answers depending on the phrasing and depending on the pitch. So it's also a question of working out what it is that we need to measure to be able to measure student mental well-being, what really matters.
Based on what we do know already, have you observed that there are any specific times in the student journey when mental health issues tend to come up?
We ask students when there are challenges for their mental health. They pop up right throughout the year, which isn't surprising, because there are different challenges that they face across the academic year. So we know those first few weeks for a fresher can be really difficult, so that adjustment can be challenging. But it also might not be until the end of that first academic term that the reality of the challenges really sink in for some students. So they might be carried along with a wave of excitement to start with, and then actually that end of term and the Christmas break can be a time that many students start to really, really kind of question how well they're coping at university. I suppose that also ties in with when they sit their first university exams, for many of them that have exams in that January period. Anything around the exam period is obviously stressful, and students have exam periods at different times throughout the academic year. I think students find the first point at which they get feedback back, and that obviously differs for all students, to be difficult. There's often a bit of a shock of a reality that adjusting to academic work at a university standard might be more challenging than they thought, and that challenges people's self-confidence, which is difficult. And then it's not surprising, I guess, as they move towards the end of their degrees, sort of concerns around graduating, jobs after university, the pressure of deciding what they're going to do. And for many students, they really feel that they have to have this worked out, which I think is such a shame, because they really have time and space and flexibility to work things out. But I don't think that's a message that we communicate very well to students. So that adds to the stress in their final year.
That kind of begs the question about pastoral care and what universities can be doing to support students. Do you think enough is being done?
No. But it's very difficult to work out who exactly should be responsible for doing more and how that happens. I think we've got ourselves into a strange situation in academia where the student numbers have crept up and up to a point where we have really very large student bodies today. And I don't think that's happened with much consideration for how that changes the student experience and the environment that they're in. I think there's been an expectation that generally existing frameworks of support will just keep up with the continued expansion. But actually, as you get, I suppose, if you change from a cohort group that's sort of 50 in a year to 200 in a year, it's not just that you need four times as much support for the students in place, but actually the whole dynamic of that group has changed completely. It's no longer a small, close-knit collection of students who can be supported by an academic. There's a lot more complexity to it. So I'm sorry, I don't have a wonderful answer for who should be responsible, but I do think we really need to think carefully and look at the whole system. We've got into a position where we've got lots of fragmented bits of support across universities, and they don't really speak to each other very well or deliver sort of a whole university approach to mental well-being. I think that's a huge challenge.
You've done some research looking at the impact that the lack of pastoral care or the increase in students and how that's kind of impacting academics who you say or the report you were involved with said that they're on the front line, and that can sometimes impact their own mental health as well as making them feel that they aren't necessarily trained enough to respond to students who reach out to them. So can you just speak a little bit about the mental wellness of academics from what you've observed?
Yeah, so we spoke to 52 academics in universities across the country to try and gauge how the change in student mental health or the perceived change in student mental health was affecting them. I think what's really distressing about that about what we heard from academics is the recognition that there are huge gaps in the support provided. Lots of the academics that we spoke to really felt that you couldn't separate academic and pastoral support, that that's a real challenge, that more often than not, when a student has academic problems, they're stemming from pastoral issues, and the other way around, that where academic problems exist, they aggravate or create pastoral problems. The academics we spoke to see their role as supporting academics, but you can't just support the student in their academic work without considering the pastoral angle. But most of the academics we spoke to said that they didn't feel well equipped to support with the pastoral side of things. So they're drawing more often than not from their own lived experience, which is putting young academics in a more challenging position. And then obviously there's a huge range in what people's lived experience is. So I think that's creating a challenge in the support that they're able to provide for students. But another challenge for academics in terms of supporting student mental well-being is how they manage the challenge of signposting. So I was surprised in speaking to academics that they all recognise that their role isn't to support the students, it isn't to solve the challenges they're facing, but is to signpost them to relevant services. And they say it quite casually. Yes, my role is to signpost. My role is to signpost. I'm supposed to signpost. And in our interviews, as we started to pull apart, so what does signposting involve and how do you do it, we seem to sort of unravel an onion and a realization that actually signposting is incredibly difficult. And I think that's worth us being aware of, because we're very good at saying non-professional people shouldn't be providing support, they should be signposting. But I think we need much greater consideration of actually that signposting is a skilled task. You have to know what the student is struggling with. You have to know who the right person is to send them to. And most difficult of all, you then have to empower and encourage the student to actually make those steps to go and seek the support that they need. And that's proving really difficult.
What do you think about events like University Mental Health Day? Are these types of days doing anything to advance the discussion around this topic?
Yes. We've seen the University of Mental Health Day growing year on year over the last sort of 5 years, and it's amazing how many people engaged last year, and I'm really hoping this year that we see many more people engage. And I know that one day on its own can't achieve very much, but I think the one day on its own can start many conversations, and we've seen over recent years this day has been able to start conversations with Universities UK, and has supported the development of their step change framework. We hope that this day continues to bring together more and more people to think about what do we need to be doing for university students in terms of their mental well-being.
Thank you very much for your time,
Thanks,
Nicola. I really appreciate it.
And that was Nicola Byram, lecturer of psychology at King's College London. So we're having this conversation around University Mental Health Day, which is March 1st, 2018. What do you guys think about national days like this? Do they really help? Do they do anything to really bring forward the conversation around mental health in the academic community?
I would say that they definitely do, particularly regarding the mental health of academics, because this is such a new topic. It's something that we haven't been discussing before. And the first step is to raise awareness about this in the first place.
Hmm. What about you, Sita?
Yeah, I agree. I think anything that can help make mental health more visible, to make it easier for people to talk about it, to get rid of the stigma and, I guess, demystify what mental health is and how to get treatment. So any kind of awareness project or initiative is always good for that kind of thing. It then does sort of lead on to the fact that there has to be some kind of action that comes from these kinds of initiatives. And it's all, you know, well and good saying that, you know, we need to talk about this a lot more, but there has to be that action to really get the services in to target students, and to help them to get the treatment that they need.
Sita, another thing that you talk about in your article is the impact of social media on students' mental health. Can you just talk about what you discovered?
So there's been quite a lot of research around the impact of social media on mental health among young people and students. And it seems to be that there is a correlation between excessive use of social media platforms such as Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook and Twitter, which can really exacerbate body image worries, sleep problems, feelings of anxiety and depression and loneliness in young people, which obviously impacts students quite a lot. So this could also be something that universities could have a look at, and how they can use social media to be more of a positive force rather than to create all these negative feelings among students.
Hmm. Sophie, what did you find out anything about the impact of social media on academics?
Yeah, so I spoke to Steve West, chair of UK's, that's University UK's Mental Health in Higher Education Working Group. He's also the Vice Chancellor of the University of the West of England. He said that one of the reasons behind this supposed increase in mental health issues, both among academics and students, was simply due to the sort of fast-paced world that we live in and all of this technology around us. So
just keeping on top of social media as well as all of the other responsibilities that academics feel they have.
Exactly.
Mm. You can read the feature from Sophie and Sita in this week's magazine on page 38 and also on timeshighereducation.com. And you can follow along on the discussion for University Mental Health Day on March 1st with the hashtag Uni Mental Health Day 2018. If you've got any comments for the podcast or contributions, you can get in touch with me, Sarah Custer, at sarah.custer@timeshighereducation.com. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.